Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I have Chris Kaufman here. I have Simon Clancy here, so it's a full boat today. Now, it'd be great if we had something to talk about, but it's...
Yeah, tell them the catch. The catch is that
you do get... Look, you do get all three of us, all right? So you do have that going for you. What you don't have going for you is this is... I don't know. I don't... To not use a dirty word. This is near the crack of the anus of the offseason.
Oh, wait. That was our tie-in. Our tie-in to the tie-dye rainbow buttholes. Yes. Is that where we're going with this? Because yeah, I can't wait.
Might as well read that story and get it out of the way.
So evidently this is going to be the it thing this summer. The thing that everybody will be doing this summer is tie-dyeing their butthole into rainbow colors. But first, you do have to, I mean, there are some tips, like, and I just, I, you know, from bunnyears.com, from bunnyears.com, you know, some tips about this. It's all about the prep. You can't forego the bleaching entirely. You have to bleach it and start off with a full,
of course,
a blank canvas. Mm-hmm. And then I guess you just kind of like dip your butthole in some colors and dye, but you gotta put Vaseline on the rest of your butt because you don't want a whole butt that's like a rainbow.
There's a TV show over here called it's called it's called The Only Way Is Essex. Essex is a region of Great Britain in which certain people have quite sort of, all right, love, I speak like this, and I go out on weekends, get really shit-faced, and try and get off with as many people as I can.
That's like people Mrs. Ross's like English cousin.
Yeah, exactly. And but on it, about 2 years ago, they talked about dyeing their arse, or bleaching their arseholes, which became a bit of a thing in the media over here. So it's been around for a while in Britain, you know.
Mm. Yeah, you guys are first.
Well, yeah. Simon, you've got one. Tell us, our listeners, what they're missing.
Yeah, I've got two bleached assholes. One is called Chris, and the other's called Alex.
You know, I think this is why Tannehill was drying his taint for so long.
This is the off-season, in front of this gentleman.
He was prepping. He was prepping for his procedure. His wife is kind of high maintenance. I could see her kind of like, putting her fist down. Fist up.
Now, how desperate are we that we're going to about to engage in some NBA draft talk, and Simon, as we speak, is logging on to MLB.com to look over his Milwaukee Brewers and how they're...
You know what? Actually, this is a podcast thing. We're going to talk about the NBA draft, and in the time that it takes us to talk about the NBA draft, Simon is going to learn baseball.
Yes.
I mean, I know loads of shit about baseball now, so it's all good.
Should we quiz you first, or should we talk about the NBA draft?
The draft first, because I'm engaged in three separate conversations on WhatsApp at the moment. So you can talk about that. I can finish my WhatsApp conversations, and then I can pay full attention to the questions, such as what is an RBI, which I'm pretty sure stands for real bad injury. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really. I'm not that stupid.
Let me give you one. What does WAR stand for?
WAR?
Yes.
Stuff that Americans start all around the world and then...
Well, that's our thing. That's our thing, you know? Yeah. We wouldn't be American if we didn't do that. But stand for in baseball?
I walk on...
Nope.
Rabbits. I have no idea. I've not even heard that before.
Walk on rabbits?
Wins War. Against replacement.
Okay. Do you know that That's once
the character in Star Trek.
Do you know that once I appeared on Seattle radio and with a guy called Jason Plunkett and Cliff Averill, the great Seattle Seahawks defensive end, and announced in an American accent the starting lineup of the Seattle Mariners for their game that evening. I was asked to do it in an American accent. And then I had to do the, I think they're playing the Royals, and I had to do the Royals lineup in a British accent. Apparently it went down an absolute storm, but I mean, yeah.
All right, do a lineup, and I have to hear this American accent. I'm presumably not Mrs. Ross.
Do your draft thing first, and then come back, because I can carry
on. And try and keep your conversation straight, because if you come back to us and you start talking about, you know, like, well, I don't know what you're going to, vacation plans or something like that. Then
yeah, exactly. No, that's all good. Go and do your draft. Go get Zion Williamson and do your little chat.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome to NBA Draft Chat.
That's an inside joke. Way inside.
Way inside as Mrs. Tannehill's fist.
And it, as inside as a bleached asshole. Right, I'm still here, but you can talk while I'm WhatsApp.
All right.
You only notice the important parts.
I'll just lob a softball to you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
None of this trading up stuff is real, is it? It's just a bunch of bullshit just being thrown out there before the draft.
It won't stop Heat fans from talking about it. Heat fans talk about the most impossible things every offseason, and they are convinced they are real.
Yes.
That they are really going
to
happen.
I remarked to you
because of one impossible offseason that really did happen.
Yes. Yeah. And no, and a few, you got to be, you know, fair is fair. No, Pat Riley has pulled off the
impossible. Back in the day, you're right.
You know, Pat Riley did trade a pile of crap to the Golden State Warriors once. And got Tim Hardaway, a 5-time All-Star in return. So
That's fair. That's fair. It's a long time ago.
He has done things like that in the past. He also did trade a poo-poo platter to the Lakers and got Shaquille O'Neal. Okay? And got them their first championship.
That's a baseball term, folks.
Yes.
Just so you know.
Yeah. So, it's happened before. But what I'm reminded of is every single offseason, everybody on Heat Twitter wants to remind me how under the radar a star Julius Randle is and how they need to go get him this offseason. Of course, they didn't get him last offseason or the one before that, but he's available this year. If he's so under the radar every single year, is he really under the radar?
Yeah, he might be under the radar, but what he's not is under the cap. So, no.
And he's going to be expensive. People are going to be shocked. I'll make a prediction. July 5th or 6th, somebody will go on Twitter and say that he's overpaid. Nice. I'm almost certain of it.
Well, we're gonna the Heat are gonna get Chris Paul, so that's the definition of overpaid,
and all $80 billion of his contract that are left on the books, which
yeah, is only that lovely much. So much of it has gone away.
Well, there's only 2 years of it left, so
you know the Heat. To be honest, though, the Heat like are kind of hyping this draft a little bit. You notice, yes. Like they're. It's almost like you can tell that whoever they end up picking, whatever they end up doing, is going to end up being sort of a focal piece of a marketing campaign. You know, they're not maybe not the focal piece, but I mean, it's like, you know, we're getting ready to hype the next Justice Winslow or something like that. You know, that's they're definitely rolling out some hype with this draft, and maybe that's why people are thinking, you know. They're going to trade up. Now there's talk about like Dion Waiters being a trade target of the Golden State Warriors. And yeah. Okay. All right, guys.
The thing that would get me excited,
get them.
They could get out from under a bunch of these contracts.
Yeah, and it would.
I told you earlier today, like there's no doubt in my mind, like everybody was saying, Goran Dragic is going to go somewhere for trade up as a sweetener to a trade up. I doubt it because every single team out there who's a contender knows that Goran Dragic could be had at the deadline for a future first-round pick. And it'll basically be whoever's future first-round pick is best can get a Goran Dragic. So,
but, I mean, is that so much better? Is that so much than, say, the Heat trading up to, what, Phoenix at number 6? I saw that speculation.
Yeah, that's the thing. But would Phoenix, like, is that something that Phoenix would want? Like, I would say Phoenix would want a haul of picks to get up there to 6.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know the draft chart for the NBA, that's for sure.
And let me tell you one thing. 6 shouldn't be
– no, it's got to be insane, though.
Yeah, 6 shouldn't be all that exciting to begin with in this draft because the more you read as far as, like, what the common sense thinking is on this draft, is that it's really a draft that has three superstars, and then everybody else is really interchangeable.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's like three superstars and just, you know, one.
Well, it depends on what you think of R.J. Barrett. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, R.J. Barrett's going to be good, I think, but, you know, we'll see. Really, it's just Zion, right? It's Zion, and then okay, well, you know, we'll see on some of these other guys.
Well, John Morant. John Morant.
No, John. Yeah, I love him as much as anybody, but, I mean, it's not like this is not another Zion.
Yeah, of course.
Well, then we'll close it up with this. Who do you think they're going to get?
I think PJ Washington makes it there. The more I read it, I think he makes it there. I think they take him. I think, like, he checks every box. He even went to Pat Riley's alma mater. So, why not, right?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, what I was reading today, I feel like I feel a different way about this every day. But today, you know, I'm reading about Romeo Langford's prowess in the high pick and roll and the Heat kind of making a late visit, you know, having him in today and talking to him and working him out and stuff like that. I'm kind of wondering about that. I'm kind of wondering, you know, if you really buy that the thumb injury was really impactful in his shooting this year and that the surrounding cast was so bad that, you know, it didn't always look so good. You can explain some of those negatives for him. You can explain them away by circumstance and maybe the Heat go for him. He's not my favorite, but you know, you look at his effectiveness in pick and roll and it's like, oh, okay, that's straight up Miami Heat stuff.
Yeah. Romeo Langford, in my opinion, the idea of Romeo Langford is better than the actual Romeo Langford.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing though. I mean, it was true. That is certainly true this year. If you watched him in Indiana, it's just a matter of, okay, did the thumb factor into that? Did the surrounding cast factor into that? You know, and do you buy that? And that's what remains to be seen. That's what's going to be interesting. I kind of got a feeling there, you know, on him and the Heat because of that, because of the way he fits. And the Heat seem to sprinkle pixie dust on guys and make them better defenders. So you know, I think he could be a better defender, or they will think he could be a better defender, I think.
All right, before we bring Simon back into this thing here.
He's asleep.
Before he's
right here.
You're snoring.
I've got a question actually. So you carry on doing your shit and then I'll ask your question.
All right, cool. One last question on this. Woj is reporting that Mike Conley is going to be traded before the draft. Well, the draft is on Thursday. Today is Monday, so I'm not a math major, but that leaves 2 days. So it leaves 2 days for a team that's been linked to Mike Conley for years, and I mean years, since before the Big Three era, Mike Conley was linked to Miami. Do they make a move? They sure do have the pieces to get him if they want him. And how
true
does
story? I've seen his parents. I've seen his parents.
He's going to the Grizzlies.
Well, that's where he is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Is he? I thought it was you see, he's here.
Yeah, if he's going to the Grizzlies, that would be awesome because that means he's returning on that giant contract that they've been trying to trade.
What a coincidence.
So you have no interest, Chris?
No, it's not that I have no interest at all. You know, I have no real opinion of it. It's sort of like, okay, you know, that'd be interesting.
It's a yawn move, in other words, right?
It is. Like, you know, to me, it is.
Yeah, it doesn't move the needle at all, really.
I mean, unless, you know, you're just using it as sort of having a little street cred for what you're going to try to do next summer.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, hey, got some things to offer. Well, Jimmy Butler supposedly wants to be here.
Wants to be here. We just don't have any money to give to anybody.
Yeah, but I kind of, you know, you saw it like when in Dwayne's last like home game.
Yeah.
With Jimmy Butler, right? I mean, it kind of looked like he really does want to be here.
It does. It really does. Yeah. But, you know, we need the money to give him, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, what are we going to say? You know, play this year on a promise that, you know, trust us when we tell you that we're going to give you $30 million a year next year, but you got to play this year for five. Yeah, I don't think that works in the real world.
I think Miami could raise the money for him, crowdsource it by selling tattoo or fake tattoos for buttholes.
Yes, or just
like Jimmy Butler tattoos on your butthole.
Or just give him a bunch of duffel bags under the table, which I never understood how that's not a thing in pro sports. Salary cap.
Chinese marketing deals.
Here, how much are we over the cap? $3 million? Okay, here's a duffel bag.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, those business ties is what you got to, or what you got to watch out for. Like
exactly,
some affiliated company or friendly company gives you a marketing deal.
Yeah, I'm sure that Dwayne Wade was all up in China searching out all these upstart shoe companies that gave him $100 million contracts, right? Mm-hmm. All right, Simon, shoot your questions.
Okay, so my points are that the Pelicans, okay, that just traded Anthony Davis, right, to the Lakers. Yes. Mm-hmm. They've got the first overall pick and the fourth overall pick, is that right?
Yep,
right.
So first overall pick is going to be Zion Williamson, yes. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I mean,
right.
That's a given, right?
Absolutely. Given.
Going to New Orleans, which is one of the best cities in the world. Let's just put that out there. Mm-hmm. So they've got Lonzo Ball coming in. Is that right?
Yep.
Lonzo, and yeah.
Drew Brandon Holiday.
Brandon Ingram was really good.
They got Ingram coming in too. They do not have Kyle Kuzma because apparently he's off limits.
Okay. I heard and I read, so I haven't. It's not like I've been told, but apparently they're looking to trade the fourth overall pick potentially to the Wizards for Bradley Beal. Is that true?
Mm. If they do that, the Pelicans all of a sudden become a playoff team overnight.
How quickly, with all these new players coming in and losing Davis but getting Williamson and whatever, how quickly can they, because I don't know where they finished last year, but how quickly can they turn it around and become a force?
Oh, force? You're talking about whenever they have the cap space to add another star. So
when can they be a team that pushes the Raptors, the Bucks, the Warriors, whoever else?
All those teams are in the Eastern Conference, so they don't have to play them. So you
talk. I would think 3 years before
Zion
comes to maturity of some.
But I think they make the playoffs right away if they land Bradley Beal, and which is also interesting that the Wizards are preparing an offer of $10 million a year to the Raptors GM Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, that's right. And they're promising they're not going to arrest him.
Yeah, they're making. Yeah, well, that's kind of important, and they're going to make him the richest general manager in all of sports. So. I don't think that they'll give him the $10 million after they trade one of his best players.
I see what you're saying.
I think that's a move. And the draft is on Thursday, so we kind of got to, we got to hurry up here.
Got to hurry up here.
You know what I mean?
And how good is Williamson?
Well, he's 6'7", 282 pounds, and he moves.
I mean, I've seen him, and it looks like a
fast and tight end. As quick and as twitchy as any athlete in the history of the sport. And he has every skill that you could want except, consistent outside shooting. But that's something that's going to develop. So he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be really
Unless
good.
He gets fat.
But I don't know. Have you seen what he looks like? Does
he
look like a guy that wants to get fat?
Well, I don't know about wants to get fat. But I'm just saying, if he gets fat, watch out.
Well, I was sitting around in a – when we were watching the lottery, and I was sitting around talking to some of the Miami Heat beat guys, and I was telling them, if he turns into Charles Barkley, is it a disappointment? Charles Barkley is like a 14-time All-Star, first ballot Hall of Famer.
True.
And I think that's really what you're looking at, kind of like a Charles Barkley, a guy who's dominant in the paint at not very, very tall, 6'7", but he can play power forward in this league because of his, first of all, he elevates over everybody.
Yeah.
And he's supremely skilled. He's going to be faster than every power forward in the NBA.
So, like a Charles Barkley is what you're thinking.
Yeah, he's going to be Charles Barkley. And if he's Charles Barkley, pray to God that he's Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
That's a really, really good get. It's not LeBron James, but LeBron James is an alien. That's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
That's the thing, I don't want to fall into is, he's another LeBron. It's we haven't seen LeBron until LeBron. So, how can we make that prediction?
Yeah, those are once in a lifetime things that just don't come around very often. Any more questions?
That's it.
All right.
Baseball talk.
All right.
Let's do it.
Tell me what you've learned in the last 10 minutes.
You are now a Milwaukee Brewers fan.
I am. Go Brewers.
All right. Name two all-time Milwaukee Brewer greats.
Fuck off. I mean, seriously.
No Robin Yount?
No, not Robin Yount.
Robin Yount. Yount.
Yount. That's a T.
Okay.
Okay. Ronnie Fingers with the great mustache?
Cecil Cooper.
So he
did. Did I just pull something out?
Yes, he's
I've got another name.
Stuff. He's looking
I'm not, no, no, I'm not. I promise you, my phone is on my lap. I promise you.
All right,
I've got another name for you. And I only know this because I watched the game the other day.
Okay.
Although I might bastardize his pronunciation. Paul Molitor?
Molitor. You know, I used to have his.
Said Raleigh Fingers. Paul Molitor is probably the second best brewer of all time behind Robin Yount.
I had his rookie card once upon a time.
His rookie card was actually really, really expensive, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
It was worth about $800.
I noticed I said had.
Oh, do you know the first baseball player I ever knew?
Go ahead.
Phil Neathro.
You mean
you make that up?
Wasn't he the knuckleball king?
Yes, Phil Negro, yes.
Oh, okay.
He's the guy who was cheating, and he was caught on the mound, and he kept telling the guy, look, I'm not cheating, and he had a bunch of gunk on his hand.
So tell you how I know that. Because when I was a kid, I watched I had a documentary video. DVDs weren't even invented there. This was 1986 of the Bears 1985 season, mainly because it showed the video of the Dolphins beating with Clayton's great catch low on his back. But I often would watch this, and there was a game in the wind at Soldier Field, which Jim McMahon played quarterback and completed a number of knuckleballs that would have made Phil Negro jealous. That's how it was announced. I think it was an NFL Films thing. That's how I know. That's how I know he was my first baseball player back in 85. There you go.
And that is why you're a Brewers fan.
That's why I'm a Brewers fan with Christian Yelich.
As of right now, are game up on
the
Chicago Cubs.
They are.
Yeah. So.
Thanks to my man, Orlando Arcia.
There you go.
Lorenzo Cain.
The Brewers also have one of the best celebrations in all sports. Their mascot jumps into a big vat of beer after every home run. I don't know.
Just fantastic. I could not be a Brewers fan.
What a job that guy has.
I mean, it's his thing. It's a Brewers thing. And he comes down like a little slide. I don't know if you've seen it. There's like a little slide in the outfield. And as soon as a home run is hit, there he goes. There goes the mascot. He's in the little slide and he falls into a vat of beer.
That is an astonishing mascot. I reckon the queue for that job is longer than like season tickets at Lambeau.
Yes. By the way, also beautiful. Miller Park, one of the most beautiful ballparks all of the country. Yes, absolutely.
Seating capacity of 41,000.
Yes, yes. And
there you go.
Supposedly, as far as like their fan base, it's been pretty consistent. And it was pretty good before they were this good.
Do you know what the Brewers' first name was?
No.
You don't, do you, fucks?
Wait, what?
They were the Milwaukee Braves, weren't they?
No, they weren't. They had one season playing at a place called Stadium. They were the Seattle Pilots.
Wow.
In 1969.
I thought you meant like first name as in their surname or the Brewers, and their first name is Milwaukee.
The Brewers are also the current holders of probably the best contract in all of American sports. I don't know if there's
Christian Yelich.
I don't know if there's a soccer player somewhere in the world who's as good as Christian Yelich is as a baseball player, who makes as little and for as long as Christian Yelich will make with the Milwaukee Brewers. Which is
I watched Moneyball again last night, by the way.
Isn't that a great movie?
It's a really fun movie, isn't it?
Yeah, although
I didn't realize that Paul Di Podesta didn't like the book, the Michael Lewis book, and not that he didn't like his portrayal in it, but just he didn't like the celebrity that came from it, so refused to allow his image or his name to be used in the film, which is why his character is called Peter Brandt, because he's essentially a made up name of the two assistants that Billy Bean worked with for a long time.
Yeah, he didn't like how it was romanticized that he was solely responsible, you know what I mean, for changing the direction of the Oakland A's. Although it must be pointed out, the movie makes it seem like he did it with a bunch of crumb bums. That team, even after losing Isringhausen, after losing Jason Giambi and Johnny Damon, that team was absolutely stacked. They had an all-star at shortstop. They had a pitching staff that had three all-stars.
Oh, Zito. Didn't they have Zito back then?
They had Barry Zito and they had Tim Hudson, who were both Cy Young candidates. Yeah. So that team was absolutely loaded, even after losing all those players. But it is a fact. They did it with a $30 million payroll. And they were going up against teams that were spending $150 million. And that was almost 20 years ago. That was 20 years ago.
And he's still there, isn't he? Still with the A's.
Yes, and he turned down – the end of the movie is absolutely true. He turned down a multi-year offer from the Red Sox to be the –
from John Henry.
Yes.
Who is the owner of Liverpool.
Yes.
And with who used absolute rocket of a wife.
He also used to own the Marlins also.
He did.
Yeah, John Henry.
He did. Yeah. Now owns the Boston Globe.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. We've gone full circle.
Yeah. What a
to the Seattle Pilots.
Podcast.
I mean,
wow.
This is the bleached asshole of the NFL season, and we have stuck it right in the middle.
You know, somehow we've wandered into the final episode of Seinfeld or something like this. Is
all right, Simon, take us to break, and on the other side, we have Twitter questions.
Coming up, there will be no mention of puckered assholes. That is all I can promise. Now, this.
Hey, it's Seth Levitt here from the Fish Tank with my main man,
OJ McDuffie, the Juice.
And Juice, we've got a special guest over the next 2 weeks in the tank.
What's up, everybody? It's Pat Surtain, and I'm officially diving into the Fish Tank. If he was better than Peyton, he definitely wasn't better than me.
That's what I wanted to get at.
That's where we're going with it.
Did you and Peyton ever play against each other in high school?
Absolutely. Beat him 35-7.
35-7. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. I had 3 rushing and 2 passing on him, accounting for all 5 touchdowns.
Out of hand. And all of them.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat came in here saying he doesn't remember stuff, but he remembered
all that.
Make sure you dive into the tank to hear our entire interview with Patrick Surtain here on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. You can catch up on what you've missed and hear new episodes every 2 weeks until July by searching The Fish Tank on Apple Music, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
Was it me? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Wasn't made.
We're starting. Like that. We're keeping it.
Good, cool. Well, welcome back. It's me, it's him, and it's him. We are 3 yards per carry, as I'm sure you know. And Alfredo has some of your questions. So, dude, hit it.
All right. And this one is from our 4th co-host, and that's Paul D. Anslinger. He manages to get into every single one of these, okay?
Yes, he does.
Cody has so many questions.
He has many, many questions.
So many questions.
He's a naturally curious person.
Yes. Clearly.
At Cody Anslinger, all right? And he writes, and this is just general. Simon, you could take this one first. We talked a lot about this guy, and he simply asks, will Preston Williams make the Miami Dolphins roster this year?
Paulie, first of all, dude, get a hobby. Stop thinking of questions to ask us,
He's not curious.
Stop it. No, I'm joking. Your questions are very welcome. I think he will make the
right questions.
Yeah, exactly. I think he will. I mean, the long way to go, and he's got a lot of work to do. But his physical talent is so, I want to say rare. And it really is. You look at the size, speed, combat. You know, people sort of downgraded him because he ran a 4.54 at his pro day at like 6'9" and 212 pounds or whatever ridiculous size this beast of an animal is, you know. I've often talked about it, and I don't know how much stock you put in it, but you know, you look at players' Instagrams, this dude is always fucking working out. I mean, always working out, whether he's running round and round a hula hoop, or he's in the gym, or he's pulling a sled, or he's working with Brandon Marshall, or he's out on a field catching 600 passes or whatever. Dude cares about his craft. And if he's got his head screwed on, and if he's the sort of person that, you know, it looks like he is, and people have talked about how he matured a little bit towards the end at Colorado State, I think he's got a great shot at making it. And I think if he, you know, he can be as good as he wants to be, I think. And if he buys in, and if he is mature, both physically and mentally, I don't see any reason why he could develop into the best receiver on the team. I really don't. He's got that sort of talent.
I think there's a role for this in the offense, and it's going to be a consistent role. And if and when Devontae Parker starts, you know, doing the thing that frustrates us so much, then who's going to be next man up in sort of that role? I think could be Preston Williams. So he could be more productive as a rookie than a lot of people are thinking.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking that all this good press that Devontae Parker has gotten this offseason, including a piece in on ESPN.com that named him one of the bright spots of OTAs, whatever that means, I think maybe they can parlay all this good press from Devontae Parker into a sixth-round pick. Maybe. And if they do,
I don't think they will, but I mean, then,
yeah.
So who knows?
So, I think at some point you've got to stop giving players away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the young ones, right?
Yeah.
All right. More Twitter questions. And this one's from Dan Tapia at DTaps13. And he writes, why is a young quarterback learning on the bench not a thing anymore? Well, I could answer that because Cam Newton happened and because Lamar Jackson happened and because
– No, Big Ben started that, remember, like 2004? Yeah.
Well, to be fair, Dan Marino played in, what, the sixth game of the season? So
yeah, I mean Dan Marino was awesome, but then there was like a big – there was almost like – until Peyton Manning had his great last 12 games of the year, you know, after starting off the first four throwing picks left and right, you know, nobody had even seen a rookie – doing what Peyton Manning had done in that year. And then like fast forward a couple more years and suddenly Big Ben, he didn't lose a game as a rookie.
Yeah.
Like I looked it up, like he didn't lose a game and he was awesome. I mean, so he kind of started it, I thought.
Yeah. It's just not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, also the contract and the cap stuff, and you only get 4 years on the contract. And you know, that I think that's really contributed very strongly to the lack of patience.
All right. Now this guy gets right to the meat of the issue. And I want Simon to take this one. This is from Jacob Wiener at Dr.
Wiener.
Yes. The guy's name is Wiener.
We
cut out my laugh. Cause that's unfair.
The guy's a doctor, Simon.
I'm being a dick.
What kind?
See what I did there? Sorry, doc.
All right, this is a very meaty question.
Okay.
Who will be more productive this season? I love this question, by the way. This is the question.
Don't try to make up for it.
I love it. Who will be more productive this season, Rosen or Fitzmagic?
Ooh.
Simon.
What do you mean? What do we mean by productive in terms better of yards year, or wins? Or?
Let's boil it down to who has a better year this year.
Well, Simon, you decide that. Like, you decide what productive means to you.
Okay, I think because it will be, I think Fitzpatrick will start the season, but I don't think there's no way he's going to play 16 games at 58 years old or whatever he is. He's not going to last the entire season. He'll get a separated shoulder or whatever. I think Rosen will come in and perform. I think he'll perform well. And ultimately, the biggest question I don't think necessarily will be answered. Because look, if he doesn't win the starting job, already you're thinking he's not going to, you know, that's kind of it. It feels to me like if he's going to be the quarterback of the future, he's got to win the starting job. You know, it's not like he's a rookie. He's had a year. So therefore, if week one they announce the start as Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think you are absolutely on the clock with Tua and with Jordan Love and, you know, Justin Herbert. Whatever, I think at that point you're like, right, we are absolutely nailed on that is where it's going to be, unless all of a sudden he comes in and he performs lights out. But I think if you don't win the job, you know, he's gonna have long enough to win it.
That's right.
And I know he's talked about how, you know, he's trying to get up to speed, and that's, you totally appreciate that, he's trying to get up to speed in a totally different offensive system, verbiage is very different, all that sort of thing. I get that he's a bright guy, he assimilates information well. But, you know, it's clearly taking time. But if across that six-week period he does not win the starting job, then you are tick, tick, tick on the clock with the quarterback in 2020. And I don't care what anybody says, because I just don't think you're all of a sudden going to turn it around in a position where you come in and, you know, turn in a sort of Pro Bowl-type performance, at which point you say, QB's off the clock. It's, you know, let's talk about AJ Epenesa, or let's talk about Chase Young, or let's talk about, you know,
the
ridiculously fantastically leggy defensive end at Penn State who just said you're too gross matter. I think he will be more productive, but I think it will be because Fitzpatrick gets injured. I just can't see him playing 16 games. And look, there's going to be a point where we'll start the season against Baltimore. He'll throw 5 touchdowns. We'll lose 51-49 or whatever. It'll be an absolute sex show. Second week, he'll throw 4 touchdowns in a, you know, triple overtime losing effort. And then after that point, he'll throw 9 picks in each of the next 3 games. And then, you know, one of his legs will fall off and that will be it. But yeah, I think ultimately it'd be Rosen, but I suspect he doesn't win the job.
Mm. Well, it is interesting that Josh Rosen has already laid down the gauntlet and said that the quarterback battle hasn't begun yet.
Mm.
So obviously that's what you say when you've lost it so far, right?
Right.
You know, like I haven't begun.
Sounds likely story, sir.
Yeah, I haven't begun to fight yet. Yeah, because you've been knocked down 8 times already.
Yeah. All right, Rocky.
All right. This is from Arturo Aguirre. I don't know if you wanted to add something, Chris.
No, not really. I think just Fitzpatrick probably more productive to be, you know, my opinion. And is he going to have that Cinderella? We talked about that Cinderella season he had with the Jets, where he threw 31 touchdowns, and it wasn't an Earhart Perkins offense, you know, under Chan Gailey. And now he's running another one, you know, maybe lightning strikes twice. But also you have to consider who he was throwing to back then with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. And who he does not have. We just talked about Preston Williams and Devontae Parker and how there's a role for that in this offense. But when he did well in Tampa Bay, he was throwing a Mike Evans and those two big tight ends. And when he did well in the New York Jets, he was throwing a Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. And there seems to be sort of a commonality, and I don't know that we have like those big dominant bodies at receiver. I think we got smaller, faster dudes, and I don't know how he's going to do with those. So, Fitzpatrick probably more productive, but I don't think it's going to be impressive.
All right, we got 2 questions left, and one of them is an absolute doozy. It's one of my favorite questions that we've ever gotten for Twitter Q&A. But I'm going to read this one first. Okay, this one's from
Is it about boobies?
No. It's a brilliant question. This is from Arturo Aguirre at Turo23, and he writes, why is Kenyon Drake not looked at as our starting running back? Which is, it's an interesting thing. Like
He is.
You read not really. If you read everything that's been written this offseason by all the beat writers, even by people like us that we talk about the running back position as a whole. Mm-hmm. And even Kellen Balazs has gotten more pub, especially from coaches. They keep talking him up, and they talk about how Kenyon Drake is all exciting and he makes big plays, but they don't talk about him as like our signature player on offense. They talk about the position group. I don't know. What do you think, Simon?
I mean, to me, and we've had this conversation before, to me, the two words that stand out for me with Kenyon are prove it, be consistent. You know, whatever people say about Adam Gase and whatever people say about the offense, Adam Gase isn't a stupid man. There was a reason last year that Drake wasn't starting ahead of Gore. And people were like, oh, you know, Gase didn't have a clue what he was doing and he should have started Drake and he wanted to lose. Nobody wants to lose. Do you genuinely think that Adam Gase was working 18-hour days because he wanted to get fired? He clearly didn't want to get fired. He wanted to win a Super Bowl with the Dolphins. Didn't work out for him, but it wasn't because he sat there and saw this guy every single day, was around him every single day in weight room, in practice, in team meetings, in everything, and thought, you know what? I don't think you are the best option for this team as a starting running back. There's a reason for that. And it's not because he wanted to get sacked, and it's not because he didn't like Kenyon, because to all intents and purposes, he's a really good kid. But there has to be a reason for that.
Would the flip side to that argument, though, Simon, be that maybe Frank Gore was just that? I mean, because he was genuinely good, right?
No, he was totally good. He was totally good.
So was he genuinely good? And as you see, and it goes further than this, too, because as you see Frank Gore, he was genuinely good with us. I expected to be complaining about that all year, and I couldn't complain about it, right?
Because no, absolutely.
But look at Damian Williams now too, because Damian Williams is another guy that jumped in and forced Kenyon Drake to share time, and then Jay Ajayi before him. Well, Damian Williams is about to be the bell cow for one of the best offenses in the league. I mean, Damian Andy Williams, Reid giving the thumbs up. It's like,
I mean, you know, Damian Williams essentially revitalized, as good as Mahomes was, and he was. Mm-hmm. He revitalized that offense and helped carry that team. Yeah. To the, you know, we know that Pat, you know, there were some miracle plays along the way. But, you know, you look at some of those games, and especially when the running back got lobbed, you know, all of a sudden Damian was stepping up to the plate, 100-yard games, multiple touchdown games, big in the playoffs, you know, and that wasn't a coincidence to me. I think Kenyon Drake's role, whether he's a starter or whether he, because I think he can become a bigger version of James White. A very, very versatile chess piece that can catch the ball out of the backfield, can line up at receiver, can line up in the slot, can carry the ball, run on every down. And, you know, Chris, you and I have talked about this ad infinitum. He's a big fucking dude when you're up close to him.
Way bigger than his listing.
Absolutely. But, you know, do they look at that and think, I tell you what, why don't we start Ballage and let's just move Drake around all over the place. Let's get him carrying the ball. Let's get him in the slot. Let's get him in motion. Let's get him, you know, because that's what Chad O'Shea and Brian Flores and the team at the Patriots did. So, not Flores specifically, but that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what they did. Versatility was the key to that offense. Every year they changed the facade of that offense, whether it was remember that year where they came out and first game of the season, they ran, I can't remember who it was, but a running back who didn't last very long. He played about four games for them, but they ran him about 35 times on a Monday night and he had like 198 yards. And then 4 weeks later, the dude was cut. And then the following season, you know, they might run the ball three times a game. Yes, exactly. That's exactly who it was. The following year, they might run the ball, you know, three times a game because Brady would take those one step drops, throw the little screen pass dump offs to Welker or Edelman or whoever it was at the time, you know, they pick up 3 or 4 yards per game. That was just like their running game. Then they had Randy Moss and it was deep outs and bombs and all that sort of shit. Then I think versatility is going to be key. So I just want to see Kenyon. He's got so much talent. He's got so much natural ability. Just prove it on a more consistent basis.
I think three things have gotten in his way. One I already alluded to is that, you know, genuinely, the guys that have been with him have actually been pretty good when they were here, right? I mean, Damian Williams ended up being what you talked about in KC. Frank Gore was really good last year. And Jay Ajayi ran wild in 2016. I mean, he was excellent in 2016, right? Oh. I mean, he didn't even have very good offensive line play. And he was doing that. And then when they ditched him in 2017, he went up to Philadelphia and ran through to the Super Bowl. And yeah, he's got an expiration date on his knee, and that's why I don't think he has a job right now. But he was good. Like, he was good when he was taking time away from Kenyon Drake. Damian Williams turned out to be good, all this stuff. So that was in his way. That was in Kenyon Drake's way. You can argue, does he have that now with this Kalen Ballage, who was a, kind of a late-round draft pick and had a few flashes last year, but maybe he's not on the same level as them. The offensive line blocking, run blocking has been atrocious in Miami since Tony Sparano was canned. So I mean, that if that even gets to like a mediocre level, like what happens? And the third thing, I think in the 3 years that Adam Gase was here, they had the fewest number of plays in the league.
Yeah.
And that included the fewest number of first and second downs in all of the NFL over those 3 years, because we couldn't convert a third down to save our life. So if you alleviate all three of those pressures, like a lack of plays, a lack of first and second down plays, even a mediocre run blocking unit, and not necessarily having the compelling players next to them that maybe we did once upon a time. I know you don't want to hear that, Alf, but then maybe you can make the argument that Kenyon Drake is legitimately poised for a breakout, I think.
I tell you who looks different physically is Ballage. His neck looks bigger. His shoulders, his arms look bigger. He looks like a much more, and again, this is only from Instagram, but he does look like a much more, he looks a much thicker player
Yes, he's big.
That he did a year ago. He has done a lot of work.
He looks bigger than he did last year. Last year he just looked tall.
Now the interesting thing for him is let's hope he doesn't lose any of that speed or that burst.
Yeah.
Because obviously that was, you know, that was, you look at what he was able to do, certainly in that Vikings game, for example. You
know, but there was always something that frustrated his coaching staff in Arizona State about him, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
maybe that was just maturity.
Watch that. Definitely. It could be. Yeah. It could be.
Yeah. All right. Now, this question is one of the best questions we've ever received at our 3 Yards Per Carry Twitter account.
Okay? I thought the last one was.
No, this is the one. Remember, I told you we had two questions left, and one of them was one of the best of all time.
Okay.
This one's a real head scratcher. You really got to think this one through, okay? And it comes from Jay at JBXYZ123, okay? And he writes at 3 Yards, does John Denny have more snap yards than Josh Rosen has passing yards this year? Think about that. Every time you snap it, for a field goal, it's 7 yards. When you snap it out of a punt, it's 13 to 15 yards. Let's go with 13 yards.
I mean, he might break the record for punt snaps in a season, certainly.
really tough. Simon,
give me an answer. Who wins? Who wins this race?
I think Rosen does.
Really? Okay. Yeah. If we punt 6 times a game, mm-hmm. we're talking about 78 yards. Let's say he hits one field goal, one touchdown. That's 14. It's about 90 yards. Okay. Roughly 90 yards of snapping for John Denny, which means that Rosen has to average 90 yards for an entire season. So he has to get around 1,300, 1,400 yards passing, which means that Fitzpatrick basically has to start half the year at least.
I'm still going with Rosen. It's a good question.
Reasonable over under, I think.
I think so too.
All right, Kaufman.
I'm gonna go with Denny.
Because
really?
He's so you're banking on Fitzpatrick playing about 10 games, I would say.
Also, John Denny is 40 years old. Is he a lock to make the team?
Do they have another long snapper?
Well, we've got this.
Actually, they do have a pretty long snapper.
Is it Wes Farnsworth?
Yes, he is actually
a free agent.
He's legit.
He's pretty decent.
I mean, this could be does John Denny belong on the Ring of Honor?
No.
No, he's fucking a long ball here for
36 years. Like, that doesn't count.
The only Ring of Honor he's going to have is a tattooed butthole. We said we wouldn't say that anymore.
We literally now have come full circle. any team that puts a long snapper on their Ring of Honor deserves to be bombed by a government or a militia. And that's it.
What was interesting, what was it last week? Everybody's making fun of the Buffalo Bills when they kept calling Terrell Owens Buffalo Bills legend Terrell Owens on their website. That's embarrassing.
No.
And the Bills have some nice players that they could point to. Why would they do that to themselves?
Did Terrell Owens play for the Bills?
Yeah, one season.
Did they? Okay. I mean,
they did that, but is this a running joke? Because I swear they did that with somebody else, like when he became a Hall of Famer.
I think they've done it twice, but then they doubled down on their mistake.
It's a Buffalo sense of humor.
Yeah,
it must be. It's a Buffalo Bills thing. So you think that?
Because I remember our response was something about Thurman Thomas being a Dolphin legend.
Yeah, Chris Carter, Dolphin legend Chris Carter.
Yeah, Dolphin legend Chris Carter or something.
I've got a village notice I'd like to put out there, which is I'm going to Philadelphia in a few weeks' time. I've never been to Philadelphia. It's one of the American cities I've not been to. I've heard. Tell me some, and just send it to, you just send it to me personally on Twitter or to the 3 Yards if you're that bored. What's good things to do? Good places to eat, good places to go, good stuff to see. It's a work trip, so I'm going to be filming some shit and all sorts of stuff. But if you are a Philadelphian, hook me up. That's it. Now that's all I got.
I got a question for Simon. Have you ever had a cheesesteak?
No, I haven't.
Well, you're going to have one now in Philadelphia.
I am. Are they good?
Well, I've never had one at Gino's Philly cheesesteak, which is the most famous place in probably
what's it called? Gino's.
Gino's. G-E-N-O. Okay.
Cool.
And there's another one across the street from that place, but Gino's is widely regarded as the best. I've never had one there, but I've had plenty before. And if done correctly, they're very good. If not done correctly,
is it just melted cheese on a steak?
Pretty much. But the steak is chopped up very, very, very fine.
Okay.
And it has to be on a sourdough roll, a large sourdough roll.
I can do that.
All right. That's it. We've given you everything on this show, okay? For it, for this being
too much,
the
far
worst
too much
part.
I mean, bum holes, sourdough, baseball chat, NBA draft,
and Brewers, all the bees, buttholes, Brewers,
Milwaukee Brewers talk,
Fred,
John
a
Denny,
bit, a little bit more,
Ballage.
More Preston Williams talk. We even did that. Yeah. So that's it. There is no more. Next week, we'll talk to you about something else. I don't know what. You know, hopefully,
the fallout from the NBA draft.
Yeah, yes. We'll talk about the aftermath of the NBA draft when the Heat will have everybody.
Perfect.
Julius Randle, Mike Conley, Zion Williamson. They'll have everybody by next.
And then I'll preview Monday. The NHL draft.
Exactly. Oh, we got to do that. The Panthers have a high pick. So, yeah, we got to do that.
I mean, literally nobody gives a shit.
All right. That's it. There is no more. Talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.